Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Tigers Today podcast. It is, what day is it? Wednesday, March 15th. Getting close to opening day, and we're waiting for it here. We have a nice, some nice weather today. Feels like it might be getting baseball weather, but someone is enjoying better weather than us for the last several days. Pinch hitting actually today for Chris McCoskey. We're bringing in Lynn Henning, longtime Detroit News sports writer. Lynn, I understand this is your 50th anniversary of your first pilgrimage to Lakeland, Florida.
You don't forget a day like that, Tony. You don't forget winning anniversaries or kids' birthdays or anything like that. And I haven't forgotten this date because it was very much a seminal moment in my life. And I had no idea, of course, it would be the scene of such regular calendar duty through the oncoming years as a sports writer. And yet, that would have been a pretty inspiring thought at that point. Of course, that's what I wanted to do, but I had no idea it would pay off where at this age I would have said, you've literally now lived in Lakeland, Florida, I don't know, 2.5 years of your life or something like that. I need to compute a little more thoroughly. But yeah, it's been multi-years that I've cumulatively lived in Lakeland.
That's
And so it's been a second
crazy.
residence.
That's if you had a good accountant, you probably could have got out of paying some taxes too, spending so much time in Florida.
Well, good accountants and I are not used in the same sentence. I'll tell you that right now.
1973. Okay. At DetroitNews.com right now, if you're listening to this podcast, check this out. Lynn gave us a rundown of his, just what makes spring training special over all these 50 years. But we have to start, Lynn, with the outfit. And first of all, by the way, it's very nice of you, and Mrs. Henning is very lucky in that you, by the way, that you don't forget wedding anniversaries. I would think many people would forget wedding anniversaries before they forget their first trip to Lakeland, Florida.
I would go along with you there, Tony. I think that's probably right. We all have our priorities.
It's good that you remember them, but I guarantee there'll be people listening to this that are shaking their heads going, no, I remember my first trip to Lakeland, but I've probably forgotten a wedding anniversary or two over the years. But anyway, let's get back to this most important part of your column, which people could check out at DetroitNews.com. Tell us what you were wearing that day.
I drove down with my buddy Jerry Pecora, who unfortunately is since passed, but that day, and again, why I have a memory that's, if people know me, understand it's crazy. It's just kind of bizarre for what I can recall in vivid detail, even from 50 years ago. And that's why I remember what I was wearing that night. Probably though, because it was such a special evening for me. I mean, I'd been hearing about Lakeland, reading about Lakeland, following this Tigers baseball team for at that point about 12 years. And so I had all these images, and this was going to be a big night. So, of course, I was on my college trip with five buddies, and you're not going to pack real deeply for something like that. But I did have one fairly nice, quote unquote, outfit. It was sort of what you might call a rose and white paisley kind of a pair of pants. This is 1973, with a burgundy matching shirt and a placket that matched pretty much the pants. So it was pretty nifty. And by gosh, I certainly wasn't going to wear anything less than my best to this first trip to Marchant Stadium in Lakeland. And I had a red windbreaker. So that night we went, it was an evening game against the Cardinals. And Jerry and I sat there in what later became known to everybody as sort of the third base grandstand there. It was certainly a less impressive and more of a Spartan facility then than it is in these days. But it sat there for the whole evening and just drank in the whole scene, then drove back 112 miles to Daytona Beach. And like I was saying, I think the thing that jumps out, Tony, is back then that trip from West or from Daytona Beach to Orlando to Lakeland was like the Badlands. I mean, there was nothing between Daytona Beach and Orlando, and there was really nothing between Orlando and Lakeland. Disney had only been there a year, so all of the expanse hadn't yet arrived to that I-4 corridor. And that's one thing that blows me away, is to know today what it was like then instead of that. But it was a remarkable experience. 6 years later, I covered my first one assigned when I was at the Lansing State Journal, just about 2 months before I joined the Detroit News. And Kirk Gibson was a rookie. And of course, he's coming out of his All-American career as a football player and baseball player at Michigan State. And so I was down covering the Gibson show. Well, he got hot, as Gibson only could do, and it became more of a story. It looked like he could conceivably make the team out of his first camp with the Tigers. So the boss says, Ed Sinesco says, "Hey, I'd like to keep there for another week." Get this. He says, "What do you think you can do it for? $150? Well, that was back in the days when $30 would get you a hotel room at the Holiday Inn where the team stayed. But, you know, they had the card and everything else. But still, it was to their advantage, and it certainly was to mine. I ended up staying 18 days. I left and immediately picked up the Michigan State basketball team and Magic Johnson the year that they went out to Salt Lake City and won it all. I picked up the tournament, followed that all the way through. So I went from Lakeland to Indianapolis to Salt Lake City, and that took up an entire final month, and then I got back and the News hired me. So it was an interesting period of time. That's probably why I remember things like what I was wearing in 73.
Well, I got to tell you, if a boss has to be very desperate for content, they're going to keep Lynn Henning and the expense account in Lakeland for 18 days.
I seem to remember
that was in your younger days, so I'm sure that you were. I'm sure that you hadn't grown into Lynn the professional.
Well, I seem to remember the State Journal business manager, Frank Whipple, saying, "This will be the last time this happens."
Until the next time.
Very memorable.
Yeah, no kidding. And I'll tell you what, you can definitely tell the difference between a casual baseball fan and a real baseball fan. If a college kid's hanging out on the beach in Daytona Beach and is going to make that 110-mile drive to Lakeland, I think that's the dividing line between casual baseball fan and real baseball fan. That's incredible.
And honestly, that's why a couple of the other guys who are at least as devoted to the game as we are didn't make it, because the charms on the beach were immense. But there was going to be a limit if I had a chance to go to Lakeland for the first time. And that went out, and obviously 50 years later, I'm not regretting that particular slice of evening entertainment and adventure that we had.
No. Well, your story is better. I don't remember what I was wearing, but I remember my first trip to Lakeland was 2000. I was also in college. I was also there on spring break. Also had driven down probably in a terrible car. And we went to Lakeland. It was 2000, and Juan Gonzalez hit a home run. And I said, boy, this is going to work out great for the Tigers.
And for about 6 months, it did. Yeah.
Well, I guess give or take 6 months. But that's incredible. Lakeland, and you write about this in your column, but you know, it's baseball, and I really like in your column, which again, people can check out DetroitNews.com. You're still writing for us, still doing great work. We're glad to have you writing for us. But you write not just about obviously the baseball, you saw the Cardinals play and blah, 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 but you also write about what just being in Lakeland means in the grander sense of things, in that I think one thing that kind of touches on with me, and it's really the month of March in general, but for me, it's just like life's about to get good. If you're a baseball fan, life, it just signals that good things are coming. Even if your team's not good, baseball's coming, which signals good weather and good times and good friends and, you know, camaraderie. And I really was really struck by that point in your column, and that Lakeland is baseball, but it's a metaphor for more.
And we see the same thing, Tony, in Detroit on opening day.
Right.
It's basically a civic holiday, and it's the start of spring. It's a farewell. It's a push out the door of winter. And that is part of the mystique down here. Everybody's been really cabin fevered for a long time. They've been without the game. They've been without green grass and sunshine and all the things that we love about spring and nice weather. Well, this really signals that it's all arriving. It's a herald. And then you marry that to the fact that people historically in Michigan and in Detroit have been pretty tigers crazy. And so those two combinations create quite the emotional inducer for so many people. They really get pretty happy about the arrival of both. And so therefore, when they can come down here to actually to the site, to the venue, to the place that they've had a lot of thoughts about, they've imagined in their minds what this nirvana is like, and then they see it. And most of them, and in fact, all of them in my experience, have all been pretty overwhelmed, pretty awed, greatly exhilarated by it. And so I tried to write about that today.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we can't talk about Lakeland and expense reports without talking about, for people that haven't been to Lakeland, there's obviously go to a Tiger game. That's the main thing. And if you get a chance and you're down there for a while, then go see them play the Braves at Disney and go see them play the Yankees at Steinbrenner Field. Those are amazing venues and cool atmospheres and totally different than Joker Martian. But if you're in Lakeland, where are we going to eat?
My favorite place is Scarpa's, and I am going there tonight.
Of course you are.
Yes, and that's Italian, and it's terrific. That's really my favorite. Now, for the steak people, it's still Texas Cattle Company, and that is per capita, I think, the biggest hit among the invading Tigers followers and fans, because most of them like a steak, and that simply is, and has been for 50 years, a tremendous steak place. So I'm not going to go there except maybe once during an entire spring training stint, because I have other options. But that is really an excellent place. I think any place around here is always going to be good for shrimp and for things like that. They've got a couple of new places downtown that stack up. There's Cuban influences and that kind of thing coming into town. There's a great sushi place on the south side of town that you've been to.
Oh, and a couple times, yeah.
Yeah, and that's really, really good. There's a Vietnamese restaurant down near Florida Southern College in that big mall down there that I like. There's a place called Grill Masters that's also very good and very popular down. You can go there any night and be very pleased at that. And so, Tony, and then they've got a fabulous Mexican place, Tapatio's. And, you know, I guess I've never been to a bad Mexican restaurant, but some are better than others.
You haven't? Yeah, I think everyone's been to a bad Mexican restaurant, Lynn.
I can say I've been blessed.
You do your research more than most, probably, though.
But, you know, Tapatio's is excellent, too, Tony. So there's just a lot. If you want to have a great plate of ribs for an affordable price, Sonny's. And so the options are many down here. Yeah. And, of course, you're never very far. There's Italian places over in Winter Haven I like, and you know there's so many go-to joints that really end up making a trip here pretty palatable.
Right, and I was down there a few times, maybe 3 or 4 years, and enjoyed it and worked with you usually, because it was back when Tom was the beat writer, and I would come down when Tom was on vacation, would take a couple weeks off, and Chris never takes any damn weeks off, so I don't get to go down there anymore. But I would come down when Tom would take a couple weeks off, because Tom valued his sanity more than Chris, apparently. And so the best part about me working Tigers beats, whether it was when I started working the winter meetings with you or covering spring training with you, was the food. And you are the maestro when it comes to food. Now, I'm a little bit more low key when it comes to food. So a lot of times I hung out a lot at the Applebee's, of course, which has I think you buy one beer, get eight free or something during happy hour. It's ridiculous. I used to like that because you'd actually run into like prospects there because it was cheap, and even Leland and Lamont used to go there quite a bit. But I remember we went to Tampa once to cover a Tiger Yankee game, and you had found this tapas restaurant called Spain. I believe it was called Spain in Tampa. And I remember we get there, the food looks amazing. I looked it up because you're like, we're going here. I'm like, all right, great, can't wait. So the first thing we do when we get there is the waitress comes over, and Lynn says to the waitress, "Oh, we're gonna start off with a pitcher of sangria." And it's just me and Lynn. And so the sangria comes, and I'm young on the beat, I'm younger and polite and whatever. But Lynn, the sangria comes, and I kind of whisper to Lynn, I'm like, "I hate to tell you this, but I don't drink wine, and it's not my thing." So I remember you're like, "Oh, it's fine, So of course you finished off the sangria. I'm pretty sure I drove home. So then the following spring, we're covering another Tiger Yankee game, and Lynn's like, "Let's go to Spain. Let's go to Spain." I'm like, "Great, that place was awesome." So the waitress comes, and Lynn's like, "We'll start off with a pitcher of sangria." Like, it comes. I'm like, "Yeah, Lynn, I just don't drink wine." "Oh, I'm sorry. It's all good. It's all good." So I drove home again.
I always say, like I said, Tony, it's important during training to stay hydrated.
Yes, absolutely. I remember too when one of the spring trainings too, we were covering GPS really hadn't become a thing yet. And we had some adventures trying to get from point A to point B occasionally, but I enjoyed it. I have lots of fond memories of covering spring training with you. But the food, by the way, the Spain food was amazing. I didn't try the sangria either year.
That's always worth a trip to Tampa, Tony.
Yeah, Tampa's got some good stuff, but that's the thing. There's just so many jaunts there, not just Lakeland, but Lakeland's amazing too. I mean, it's just, if you haven't been, I mean, it's why not,
It ends up being a kind of a, not, I shouldn't say bucket list, ends up being usually right at the top of a lot of people's travel musts from Michigan, from our region. And again, I love it when I see people who finally come down here, who've aspired to for a long time, and then they get here and their eyes are big as dinner plates, and they just really, really, really find themselves in the thrall of this venue at Lakeland. And I, it's either your thing or it isn't, but I don't even think it has to be your thing, so to speak. And to still sweep you away with just the grandeur of the weather, of the trees, the greenery, the ball fields out back where the kids are playing, Marchant Stadium during a game, the Ospreys whistling again as they flap up to their nests in the light towers. That there's always a little ambiance there. It just everything about it is. It's about renewal, and it's a Renaissance experience. It is every year for me.
Right. I'll tell you, people that, in general, I despise the state of Florida. I don't like the heat. I don't like other things. Florida,
Understand.
like I ha if I'm going to take a vacation, Florida would not be in my top 100 places to go in the world, except for spring training. Like spring training, being down there for that is amazing, and it's so much fun. And again, it's just not just about the baseball. It's just about, it just makes you feel good that, good days are ahead, I guess. It's just like, it's like really the whole stretch here, with the way I look at it, is March Madness starts, then the Masters and opening day. And it's like, and spring trainings. And then like that stretch is like, that's where I start to feel better about things just in general.
Know what you mean, buddy. It does. It signals again that we've said goodbye to the dead season, to the dead sports calendar. February is really the one rather empty sports month of the year. And now everything is percolating again. And I do wish that more of the teams were still around. I liked it. The Braves are over at Disney. We all loved it when we had more teams in the immediate area here. And it used to be, of course, the Astros were in Kissimmee, and you always had a team in Winter Haven. All that is gone. But I still really kind of savor the trips to Clearwater, to Dunedin.
Yeah, I like that one.
Sarasota is fine. Bradenton is fine. And Tampa, the Yankees have, as you know, more of a big league park there. So it's really not a quaint, pardon me, spring training experience, but it is extremely cool to get over that way. And I just like it there. I like all of the ballparks on that side. I wish we got a little more of an interaction with Fort Myers down there with the Twins and with the Red Sox. That doesn't happen. And so when you have to go the other way, it can be a long, long, long trip.
I took a couple of those, yeah.
Yeah, that's a tough
one. That was the other thing. When I was always working with you, amazing that I got the long trips.
I wonder how that worked out. I can't believe it. No, I'll tell you, Tony, it used to be that those guys were all right in the same radius here. It just made every day kind of a snap. That logistically is not the case anymore, but it's still pretty good.
Yeah, it's a cool experience for sure. If you haven't been to spring training, get there. And again, read Lynn's column at DetroitNews.com. We can't talk about spring training without talking about prospects. And I want to get into a couple of guys from this year's camp. But before I do that, I'm very curious. You've covered a gazillion of these things now. 79 was your first one covering. 73 was obviously your first one going, but 79 was your first one covering, and you've done dozens since. Give me some prospects, some can't-miss prospects who completely missed. I want to know a couple of guys who you spent way too much ink on who never saw the light of day.
Oh, boy, we can put together.
Spring training is part of, too. It's for all the hype. There's a lot of hype in spring training as well.
Yeah, I mean, you think there's Eric Munson was, what, a number two overall draft pick. Really didn't amount to much. You can think about all kinds of guys. I mean, if I go back to the 70s, the 80s, Brent Cleveland was a guy that really didn't turn in much. He was a second rounder. Jacob Turner was involved in that Aníbal Sanchez trade, but it really didn't become the pitcher what was anticipated. We can go on and on and on.
Who was going to replace Lou Whitaker at second base?
Oh, I mean, back when Sparky anointed Chris Paparo.
Is that who? Yeah. That was one who stuck out to me.
Yeah. Sparky would go completely bananas over these guys in spring training. There were a lot of those kinds of dudes. You'd see those all the time. And I suppose you could say, Akil Badu, everybody said, well, hey, what if he's another Chris Shell? I said, he's not going to be another Chris Shell. Mm-hmm. He's got too much talent. That still exists, that appraisal. He's got too much talent. He's just not showing it yet, and it's getting a little worrisome because he put together, that was no illusion, putting together that whole year that he did in 2021, but he isn't getting it back. Mm-hmm. And that's become again, a little anxiety provoking for the Tigers because it's looking more and more like maybe it won't. And that's a shame because he could have had the capacity to hit at the top of that order and really be a lot of fuel for this team this year. But it doesn't look like that's happened. But they've got other people coming. I'll tell you, they're going to love Colt Keith. They're going to love Isaac Pacheco. Parker Meadows has turned himself completely.
Let's go with him.
Jeepers.
He gets sent down this week. No surprise to anybody that's there, like you or Chris, or, you know, the fans don't understand. I mean, they see he's a prospect. They see he's hitting the snot out of the ball. Explain the process with Parker Meadows. Tell us who he is. What's the long game with him?
Well, a year ago, everybody figured he just wasn't going to cut it because he didn't have the bat. Well, guess what? He had turned himself in the span of an offseason by really focusing an entire offseason on hitting fastballs in the cage to a hitter. And that's where he is today. And, of course, he led, all of the Grapefruit League in home runs before he was sent back to minor league camp yesterday. Tony, you're probably going to see him playing center field. I would say no later than August, with Riley Green then I think able to move over to left, and that will give them tremendous range from left field to right center field. But Parker Meadows, and unless he gets hurt or unless he goes into a nosedive that certainly wasn't evident last year or during spring camp this year, is going to play his way right into it. Now, this is not all that much of a surprise. Very much at the top of the second round draft pick, five or so years ago out of high school, and 4 years ago. And this is a good talent here. So, and he can absolutely fly. I mean, he is sprinter speed stuff with power and a left-handed bat. He's legit. Colt Keith, they got to find a position for him, but he's going to be legit. He could come up conceivably this year. Isaac Pacheco is going to have to season. He's only 2 years out of high school, but he's got a chance to be heard from no later than probably next spring. Those guys can do it. And then, of course, I'm very interested to see who they get with this third overall draft pick in July. I've already been working on that heavily. And the one kid from the University of Florida who I saw 2.5 weeks ago at Jacksonville, Wyatt Langford, could end up being there too. Tremendous center fielder, right-hand hitter, just a superb talent. So they're going to end up, again, by virtue of this year's draft, on top of what they're now amassing in the minors, they're going to end up here with a pretty good core of talent. It won't be here overnight, but increasingly they're adding to the roster with these young guns, and that's going to turn around baseball in Detroit.
Interesting. On Meadows, I guess I was a little taken back. I don't follow the team as much as I used to back when they were in their heyday. Yeah. I've got other stuff that I focus on these days, so I don't get to really dive in as much as I like. But Chris mentioned the same thing last week, Meadows center field. I watched a lot of Riley Green last year, and he's a pretty damn good center fielder. Is it just automatic that Riley's moving over? And I mean, is Meadows that much more athletic? Or
He's that much faster.
Okay.
And Riley Green has great range, mm-hmm. but in a speed duel, Parker Meadows is going to win. He's going to win against anybody on this team or in the system. And that's how much of a horse he is. So that changes the dynamic. But again, left field, all that means is you've got the equivalent of two center fielders playing left field and center field, right, with all the acreage at Comerica Park. That can be a tremendous, tremendous edge. Right. And that's what good teams do. They have that kind of two-way player in their lineup.
Right. Okay. Well, and it's an edge too, because after your 20 years of lobbying Congress, they're finally moving the fences in. So yeah, that makes it even a bigger deal for them to have two guys who can cover that ground.
Yeah, I need to ask Biden to get make an executive order to bring in the right center too, and deep left center. But they only did, they only brought in center field 10 feet. It's that still second deepest straightaway center in all of baseball, next to Coors Field, which of course you can hit a ball 350 there and have it go 420. So they've still got themselves a very deep ballpark. I want to see what Scott Harris says about that when he sees Torkelson and Green pay a price in deep left center to right center, but that'll have to be his call. But I think it will be his experience this year.
Well, really quickly, because we are running out of time on the Zoom, because we don't get the upgraded Zoom account because we spend too much money on your expense report. We don't get the extra dollars to do an extra 10 minutes on Zoom. So really quickly, though, you mentioned Scott Harris, first year, first season, that he's taken the methodical long game approach, which I think was expected. And I think it's the right way to do things. I don't think I think you lose a lot of credibility if you come in and blow things up on your first day in the office. I don't think you can do that. So I think that there is a long game here, but just on drafting, I don't know how much you've interacted with him or whatever, but the draft coming up, you're obviously following the draft. You follow it as well as anyone in the Detroit market. What philosophy do you think he's going to bring into the draft, and will it be different than the previous regime?
That, of course, is what we're all waiting to see in July. But already there's been more than a hint that some things are going to change, because really the first move he made,
right,
he hadn't even been in his seat about 30 seconds, and he decided to replace amateur scouting directors. He fired Scott Plyce and then hired Rob Metzler, and Mark Connor. And these guys have very, very, very good reputations with their past clubs, Rays and San Diego and so forth. And these guys are now going to be running the draft. Well, that tells me greatly ambitious things are going to happen and of a different direction than we've seen with Detroit's draft the last 4 years, which is really, Tony, why this team has not won in 39 years. It's been all about ineffective drafting for four decades. That is going to change if a new GM CEO has any say about it, and he has all say about it. So that's what I'm waiting for in July too. My guess is you will not see a pitcher taken with a third overall pick. It'll be a bat. That doesn't mean a guy like Paul Skenes from LSU, who has a chance to be Steven Strasburg, wouldn't be picked. But I think he would go in one of those first two spots before he would even be available to Detroit. And so I'm expecting you'll see a very emphatic move here now to get offense and to follow through with Scott Harris's pronounced focus on the strike zone. You're going to see all that stuff, and you're going to say, oh yeah, he's done it with all of his acquisitions, whether off the waiver wire or minor league free agents during the offseason. He's going to do the same thing with the draft. So I'm expecting there to be a lot of revelations, pretty much reinforcing what we heard from Scott Harris through these first few months.
All right. I'm still waiting for your first mock draft. So hopefully we
well, I got three of them down. I got Dylan Cruz from LSU going first. I've got Paul Skenes from LSU going second. And then I've got our friend Wyatt Langford, again, who I met a couple of weeks ago. I've got him going third to the Tigers out of University of Florida. It's a rich draft at the top of the board. I can tell you that.
All right. Well, very good. We're going to cut it there, but again, appreciate you taking the time to discuss your wonderful history with Lakeland, and hopefully many more years be added to that history between you and Lakeland. Again, check out Lynn's column, DetroitNews.com. You can check out all of our Tigers coverage at DetroitNews.com throughout the week from Chris and Lynn. And the season's almost here. I mean, we'll be doing a baseball preview section before you know it. Spring is here. Good days are ahead. And I appreciate you taking the time to break down these prospects. And I'll let you go eat. You're going to go eat somewhere fancy. I don't know if you'll be wearing your white 70s shoes and your paisley burgundy pants, but to dinner. But I'm sure you'll find a nice place to eat.
I'm not sure I'll be any more stylish, but I will show up with an appetite, Tony. So
very good. All right, very good. And I won't be there. So knock yourself out on the sangria, but you're drinking for one.
Hey, buddy.
Lynn Henning, Detroit News. Thank you. We'll catch up soon. We'll be back with another podcast next week. Lynn, enjoy your dinner.
Thanks, Tone.